And welcome to Tabletop Radio Hour, your podcast for everything tabletop. My name is Zach, and this week I've got the regular crew. I've got Mark, and I've got Steve. Mark, how are you today?
I'm doing dandy. How are you doing?
You know, I'm not so bad.
Awesome.
And Steve?
Top of the world.
Top of the world. Well, thank you, gentlemen, for joining me today. We have another talk show here, and I think we'll go ahead and get in with our newest segment, Session Zero. In Session Zero, we talk about kind of our next game session we want to run, not necessarily the one we're gonna run. I think we've come to that determination the more we think about this, but
true.
But yeah, in this case, we have been talking a lot about Star Trek. The new Picard series just came out a little while
ago.
Super
fun.
Yeah.
So we've been really hyped on a lot of Star Trek stuff.
Yes. Well, I think it's fair to say we've kind of wanted to try the new Star Trek Adventures by Moe Diffius since it came out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know if we can use that word new anymore, because I don't know.
No.
The newest.
Yes, yes. Agreed.
Definitely.
New in 2017.
Yeah, I think we've waited long enough that this isn't new anymore.
Very good point, yes, but still.
Definitely new to us, the very newest version of Star Trek.
I'm kind of a classic lover, so pretty Star much Trek Adventures. New to me, so.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Mark's kind of the same way, because Mark's run and played mostly the older games.
I have played every version of every Star Trek game except this one. I started with the Fossa game, did the Last Unicorn. I even played the Decipher version a few times, so yeah. I've been kind of aching to do this,
mm-hmm.
And it's kind of interesting. I feel like lately I've been kind of pushing myself a lot as a game master. We tried some experimental stuff here. Our Tuesday night game is doing Conan, which is way outside my comfort zone. I've been doing some play testing on my own game, which is kind of pushing myself. And I really felt an urge to kind of pull back and get back in my comfort zone.
Back to roots?
Yeah, yeah. So that's why I really kind of wanted to get to Star Trek. We've put it off because I think Star Trek works best with a fairly large group, you know, so you can have a good crew. The Modiphius rules have some great rules for supporting characters that I think helps with a smaller group. But I came up with a concept that I think is going to be even better for just two players. So that's kind of the idea I pitched, and that's kind of the direction we're hoping to go with this. So,
and it's a great idea, and I am looking forward to it.
Good, good.
Yeah. It sounds like a good idea, definitely. Mm-hmm. Because all of the things that you told us about what you're wanting to do with it goes in line with the smaller party, smaller crew kind of feel.
Yes.
Less of the, hey, the captain takes control.
Sure.
And kind of says what we're going to do. This is more of a, we're a more equal level characters.
Right.
And,
well, it's funny because, well, go ahead and talk about the concept, and then we can talk about
I think. You know, because Star Trek hasn't been an option, I've been doing a lot more espionage kind of themed, because that is something that does work really well with only one or even two players.
Or a few people.
It doesn't work well with a larger group. So,
right.
Basically, kind of what I proposed is going with Starfleet intelligence and doing a Star Trek espionage type of scenario. But, you know, as you were talking about the captain, that's one of the big debates in playing any of the Star Trek games has been, is one of the players a captain player character, or do you make the captain an NPC? And either way, I think you run some risk of diminishing the agency of the players. Mm-hmm. So, you know, or making one player more powerful than the other. And you know, so it's a difficult thing to balance. But this, if you're both kind of working outside of the structure of Starfleet, it gives you an ability to be on a little bit more level playing field, and something a little different too, hopefully.
Well, and because from the source material, basically, from all the Star Trek shows and movies you get, it's very much a large bridge crew. You know, you've got six or eight people that the whole thing's structured around. So that's sort of the ideal, or the standard sort of frame of reference. And without getting too spoilerish about the new show, I think the Picard gives us sort of a nice alternative to that, a smaller ship with a smaller crew, and things still... You know, you can see how that still functions in the framework of Trek, even if you don't have, you know, eight people on the bridge, you know, right. Like shouting out status updates. So,
right.
I'm looking forward to it. I think it can really work out nicely.
Yeah, I think so. I actually have have the basis of an idea that's kind of centered on a scene that was cut from the Search for Spock. So I'm kind of looking at the movie era, probably right around the time of Star Trek IV, probably not tied to those events, but going on around that era. So that's kind of where we're starting from. That's kind of where we got our basics. So based on that, what kind of things are you expecting, or what are you seeing? What do you perceive as kind of role? Well, what are your experiences with Star Trek, I guess, especially that era?
We'll start with me because it'll be a little bit more brief.
Okay.
before we go over to Steve.
Okay.
I am not that well versed in the older stuff. I've probably seen Star Trek 1 and 2. And then maybe part of Star Trek 3,
okay.
But I have not seen Star Trek 4. So that's what I'm going to have to do my research on.
Okay.
Most definitely.
Star Trek 4 is fun. You'll like Star Trek 4.
I will say it's not really necessary for this.
Yeah.
But it is a fun movie, so I highly recommend it. It's worth it.
Oh, I'm finding it.
It's one of the even-numbered ones, so you're safe.
That's so you're true. Safe.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, that's about right. That's
and it kind of completes a trilogy. I think 2, 3, and 4 are kind of tend to be perceived as a trilogy.
Yeah.
They all kind of fit together a little bit to bring things around.
Agreed.
Yeah. But Steve, go ahead and we'll switch over to you.
Well, here's the thing. Okay, so for TOS era, like we don't have a whole lot of kind of firsthand examples of what Starfleet intelligence does. Like we don't have a whole lot of examples of the espionage. The closest thing we have, well, that I thought was sort of in Star Trek VI, where things get a little bit more political, and we see some of the factional kind of backbiting, and that Star Trek really is kind of, or that Starfleet is doing things sort of behind the scenes to an extent. Mm-hmm. So honestly, that's only my kind of firsthand frame of reference on it. I think like Enterprise may have tried to do a little pre-TOS skullduggery, so you know, we kind of know it exists from a historical framework, but as far as that TOS era, things were pretty squeaky clean. Like, you know, they went through great pains to kind of establish that it was more or less a utopian futuristic society, and generally there's not a whole lot of, you know, like behind the curtain politics in something like that, but sure. we did see some with Star Trek VI, so I think, like, at this point, that's sort of all we have. Like, they're still kind of pulling levers, and we know that at some degree there's still factions in Starfleet that maybe, you know, don't have everyone's best interests at heart, or are willing to put, you know, Federation first, kind of, you know, make Starfleet great again type of mentality in mind. So
Now, one thing I will say too is a lot of some of the stuff I'm kind of pulling is from the FASA role playing game,
which, okay.
had a huge amount of backlog, and that actually had a supplement for playing Starfleet Intelligence.
Oh, perfect, perfect.
So some of the stuff is pulling from there, and yeah, so that's helped a lot.
That's great, and that's all new to me. So this is going to be new to both of us, Zach. This is mm-hmm. going to be pretty fresh.
And yeah. The idea I have, I guess I can spill this out a little bit more, is that you are going to be Starfleet officers. You're on a ship, and you are pulled into a Starfleet intelligence mission, so that you don't have to know too much about Starfleet intelligence.
Okay. You know,
your characters are kind of being put into this. They need some anonymous operatives. So they pull a couple that aren't known operatives. So, you know, it's okay that you're not real familiar with everything.
Because our characters really won't be.
Right.
Well, and plausible nice. Deniability, right? And exactly. Expendability. If we get that captured, is true, we can't say anything. So
yes. So one of the things I am going to be asking of you when you come up with character concepts is think about characters that would be pulled from a starship duty for a intelligence mission. You know, I don't know that the navigator would be as, you know, for example, I'm not sure the navigator would be pulled as readily to go off on a covert mission as
like a science officer.
Science officer, maybe, or, right. You know, maybe communications or, you know, some, mm-hmm. you know, there's a lot of other.
Yeah.
Something that's more needed on like an emergency mission than other
roles. Something that would work undercover. Yeah.
Or maybe some sort of specialized skill that they just didn't have in abundance in intelligence officers. So
it's possible. You
know, xenobiology or something in, like not suited to one particular mission, because we're gonna want to potentially do this more than once, but something that's very specialized.
Yeah.
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 I agree with that.
That's possible. So, so based on that, you know, I guess, you know, what other questions would we have for this sort of thing? You know, we don't want to get too detailed with our character creation yet. We'll do that off air, but, what questions do you have?
Okay. So we need, well, if we're making up characters, we need to have balance. So we're not making the same guy twice. So
we'll definitely make them together at one point, I believe.
Yeah, when we start rolling dice, I think we can put it together. But we're not gonna want to be like total overlap. I think. Exactly. Did you want to do an alien and a human?
One thing that's interesting about this game is I think the characters are a little bit more generic than previous versions of Star Trek role playing.
Okay.
Which kind of fits with some of the later, series. You know, we saw Geordi just jump from running the helm to being the chief engineer. You know, and whereas you know you wouldn't see that in the original series. Sulu was a pilot, and that's what he did. And you know,
when he wasn't swashbuckling.
Yeah, exactly. Scotty was the engineer, and you didn't have as much flexibility. Whereas I think this game, there is some specialization, and you do have, you know, unique skill set, but I don't think you're going to be as hindered by saying, well, this guy can only do this. So that's a bonus, but still. But yeah, obviously, player balance is always
always value. A good thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, even though we're not power gamers, you know, it's nice to kind of plan out your characters a little bit more than you normally would for Star Trek.
Well, there's a fair bit of overlap between sort of science officer and engineer. So I think that if we wanted to have a character that had more of the technical skills and another character that had more of the either social, like in Star Trek, physical isn't really as much of a thing anyway. So I don't think anybody needs to be a beef tank,
they don't have to be a Rhine.
Right. I'm sorry. Rhine is redundant. In Star Trek, he's been in the unemployment line, maybe.
Exactly.
But no, I mean, but you know, maybe somebody with, if not like like with if not a captain, but sort of a command presence, maybe a face, somebody who's got charisma or some other kind of skills that the technical guy doesn't, that so that the two characters would complement each other.
Sure.
Absolutely. And since charisma is usually your dump stat, I guess that'll be me.
That's fair enough.
Well, actually, let's talk about character structure a little bit.
Yeah.
The way it works is you have six attributes, which are control, fitness, presence, daring, insight, and reason. Then you have six disciplines, which are command, security, science, con, engineering, and medicine. And the way it works is you combine one of the attributes with one of the disciplines, and you create a target number.
Okay.
This is based on the 2D20 that Modiphius is pretty much
Right.
Right.
gone
been
all
in
doing
on.
for all of their games. Yeah.
Conan,
Right.
John Carter, yeah, all that good stuff.
Yeah. So you get that, you create that target number, then you roll 2D20s, and anything that's below that target number is a success. There are ways to get more D20s. You can get more, roll more dice. The more you roll, the more you get under your, the more successes you can generate.
Okay.
Right.
Then you also have focuses. Focus, if a focus is applied to your action, that means that any die that rolls below your discipline counts as two success. So
Okay.
if you don't have a focus, you're just shooting for that target number. But the focus allows you to possibly generate even more successes.
So if you had a science officer with some sort of a focus in computers, for instance,
If they're using a computer, then
and they're
yes,
using a computer, then yeah.
then yeah.
Okay.
In that specific
Makes sense.
example, what it would probably be is maybe insight and science. And then if they had the focus of computer, anything that rolled below their science would be two successes.
Perfect.
Makes sense. Yeah. It
Then
reminds
you.
me a lot of Conan.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
This is sounding very familiar.
Then you have values. Values are kind of these statements that character defining statements, basically. If a value is, if you're doing something that calls into, that falls under one of your values, you can use a determination. Determination is something, is a point that would allow you to add a die, but that die is automatically considered a one. This is similar to, John Carter, Conan both had these things
Yeah.
that you can play, but in this case, it's tied to your value. It has to apply to a value. So
Okay.
this game really forces you to kind of fit into your character concept and play your character, which is kind of cool. So those are some of the things that you're kind of considering. And when you talk about balance, you might want to specifically kind of focus on those attributes and disciplines. And kind of make sure that
Yeah.
you have, between the two of you, the majority of them at least are represented.
Are covered.
We've got some sort
Yeah.
of a coverage on all of them, yeah, or yeah,
Right.
as many as possible at least.
Yeah, as many as we can with the amount of points or math it allows us to do. So yeah.
Exactly, yes. But
Well,
yeah, that's really cool.
I always love doing brainy tech guy, so whatever our Spock science architect type guy, I'd like to call dibs on that.
Makes sense.
if there's like more of a either a command or maybe I mean phaser guy isn't really a thing, but somebody who's
Phaser
a little bit more active or outdoorsy. I don't know. What do you think? What's coming to mind,
The
Zach, for you?
anti-red shirt? Is
Yeah,
that
the
what
red
you're?
shirt that
Yeah.
refuses to die.
Yeah. He keeps going, but keeps succeeding. Yeah, I mean that's kind of what I'm thinking too. Probably just go the human route
So like a
Okay.
because
science officer and a security
science.
officer, basically?
Yeah.
That would
And
be
the
a nice
human
something along those lines.
route would be great because I was already kind of leaning towards alien. I'm going through the list of like ooh, I can do the Andorian thing finally. I've always wanted to play an Andorian, or you know, all these other like cool races they've got in Star Trek. Yeah. So yeah, I'm casting a wide net, and I like the idea of doing something alien.
Nice. And one of the things, one of my favorite bits from the FASA Starfleet Intelligence is, I might have mentioned this before, but they mentioned that humans are really valuable intelligence officers because they can be made up to look like any Star Trek alien. as opposed to any other aliens, which, you know, are harder to
make make look into another alien.
You know,
you
can't.
The humans kind of a blank canvas, man.
Yeah. You can paint a human blue and stick antenna on them and they look like an Andorian. But an Andorian, you can't just make the antennas go away.
You can't the antenna away.
Yeah. You know, so, if you cut them off, they get dizzy and they can't fight.
So it's, it seems like perfect logic to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh my God, this is gonna be so great.
That's great. I'm gonna love this. Yeah.
All right.
Even though it's gonna pain me a little bit because I'm very logical in real life, and so I wanna be like a Spock character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
well, and I mean, I'll tell you what, like the go to for sciencey guy is Spock, right? And honestly, I love Spock and I love Star Trek Vulcans. However, I also think Vulcans are done to death, okay? Like,
oh, absolutely.
I feel like
that's another reason I'm not doing it.
Every freaking bridge crew has had a Vulcan for no reason. And at this point, I'm just kind of like, okay, like, just, I've hit the saturation point on Vulcans, so I'm definitely going to be looking at something else.
Okay.
You know, I'm not doing the whole Klingon science officer thing, that's for sure. But I'm going to go through the list and pick out something fun.
Cool. Well, I think
but if you look through all the different races, the alien races and stuff like that, it you know, it shows that the Vulcans are in any available in any timeline. So
true. Yeah.
So yeah, and, it would be very common that it would be in there.
Yeah. Also, there are other options too. I have some of the expansion books that have just about anything has the characters from or the species from the animated series. They have
give me the red guy with the long neck. Okay, go on.
but you know, like Deltons, or you know, some of those other, you know, more obscure ones.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have some other concepts, we can go in other directions too. So
you know, I just said I wasn't playing a Vulcan, and obviously this would actually be unique to context, so this is probably not going to work. But how about Romulan?
I would say this is too early for that.
Yeah, they're definitely
there's
not
really
on good
not
terms.
Much. Yeah,
and doing a Romulan kind of double agent thing might get a little bit weird off the bat. But if there's, you know, okay, yeah.
True. So, but yeah.
I'm just really jazzed about Romulans after Picard, so
I can understand that. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I understand. Yeah, mm-hmm. I understand.
And very, no Borg stuff, because Borg were, I mean, pretty much not TOS.
Right.
So
right, they're definitely it's definitely too early for that. So
not that you'd have.
Well, I think we got some basics here. Anything else we need to go over before moving on?
Not that I can think. I don't think we're gonna give you a anything story wise on what we want to run, because we know you're gonna run a great Star Trek game and we're gonna let you run.
Okay. So, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, good.
So yeah, we'll let you run. We're not gonna give you any tips, suggestions, anything for the story, because we know your brain.
Okay. Good. Good. All right.
But okay. I am excited for character creation because one of the most fun I've had was making a character for the FASA Star Trek game. Mark and I were going to play a FASA Star Trek game online.
We did,
past.
Didn't we? Yeah.
It didn't work out. It fell through. But we still created characters, and that was the most fun I've ever had. I created a character for that game, and I was so excited.
That is a really neat system. You know, I got to say, I think the best part of FASA is the character creation. I think that's a little bit more fun than the actual game to some degree. But
would you consider, or would it be appropriate to revise that character for this game? Or was he not at all something that would work here?
I don't believe it was something that would work here.
Okay.
I believe it was definitely a captain. I believe mine was the captain. Mm. Actually, no. Mine. I can't even remember. I'll have to go back and see if I even have it. But
yeah. Best time I ever had. Totally blanking on it. Yeah, that's a sign of a great time.
Nice.
If I ever got blackout drunk on character creation,
the process was really cool because you put a lot of story of backstory detail into this character creation, because basically with the Fossa Star Trek, you basically go through all of your character's young life. So like you go through Starfleet Academy and maybe you fail and then you have to go through again. So it's like you go through these different milestones in this person's life and you see how they grew up, and it makes you a lot more close to the character because you saw what they went through.
Yeah.
Because it's all based on random tables and values and stuff like that.
Now, I will say this game is similar. I don't think it's, you know, in some ways it's more streamlined, but it's also a little bit more narrative. So I think, I think we'll have some fun with character creation too here.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Like I said, I'm thrilled for it. And I'm very excited for the game as well, because I really want to get into and see how Star Trek works with this kind of Modiphius system.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it should be exciting.
Agreed. But yeah, we've talked way too long on this session, session zero, but you know, but we have to do it sometimes.
Yeah.
And I think that'll be it for this segment of Session Zero. Now on to some main topics here. Mark's kind of running the show with topics, because he gave us a bunch of topics this week. So, but yeah, Mark's got this situation, and I think it involves Steve, from my knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
But
I was present.
He's a witness.
I was told that Mark was told that the GM can do anything he wants to.
Well, Mark, go ahead and kind of recap the specifics of the scenario from our last game.
Well, okay. I basically, you know, as I mentioned, I've been running Conan, which is a little, you know, I'm kind of pushing my comfort level with a different genre. And I was having some challenges with the game. And, you know, I kind of was bouncing some ideas off Zach, and he suggested, you really got to sit down and just talk things through, which I did. Yeah. And there was some, you know, and we bounced some ideas around. And during that discussion, the comment came up, you're the game master, you can do anything. And that really kind of horrified me.
Okay.
That perception is out there. And I think it's common. I think people do have that idea that, you know, a game master can do anything.
Well, and to add some qualification to the topic, we're talking about in regards to the story, in regards to the narrative, the game master can do anything.
Well, it's still, even with that, you know, I know the classic example that everybody talks is the game master can drop a rock out of the sky and kill the entire party, which mechanically, yes, that is true.
Mechanically, I mean, he can, because...
But is anybody ever going to game master with that player again?
Well, and probably not. It might make you a bad game master.
Just might,
And, but dropping is in your arsenal. It is, you know, it is available to you as a game master.
By strict definition of the word is, I guess, but... but not really. Should, I mean, not if you expect to be a decent game master. And let's flip it. Fair. Let's flip it and say, okay, you're dropping the enemy, you're dropping the rock on the enemies and helping the players.
Okay.
Again, the game master can do that, but should they? Not because you're basically taking away the agency of the players. And I guess that can even be further split out into two different scenarios. Let's say you're in you've set them up with a monster, and partly into the battle you realize, oh, I threw way too much monster at them.
Mm-hmm.
So you do something, you know, you drop a rock on the monster and kill it.
Okay.
That is, you know, maybe a scenario.
And but honestly, and it's not a good device, but Deus Ex Machina has been a device since the Bronze Age of the storytelling. Dawn of time.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Right. That's yeah. That I was going to bring that up, but I never remember how to pronounce it.
Neither. I think I nailed it this time, though.
Congratulations. We'll go with that.
Yeah, that's how I would say it. So yeah, congratulations.
The other solution is, or the other scenario is, you know, you've made it clear there's a monster in here. It's way too powerful. You don't go in there, and the players go storming in anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Then, if the player does the okay, I'll save you, I'll drop the rock on the monster and kill it for you, then what you've done is you've taken away the player agency, and basically you've told the characters there will no longer be any consequences for your actions.
Right.
And, you know, and you know, we're talking about pretty broad strokes, you know, pretty dramatic resolution here. It could be more subtle than dropping a rock out of the sky, but
right,
the premise
right.
Yeah,
it could
is
be
the same.
It could be used in any way. It's just whatever way you get those players out of that danger using the narration.
Right.
Like, and but the real point here is the game master is, you know, at least if they're a quality game master, they're really a slave to the narrative. They're a slave to the genre. They should be a slave to the player's actions, in order to maintain that cooperative interaction of responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Without right? being too dramatic, now I'm horrified. Okay. No, and I'm not horrified, but there's, I understand what you're saying, but I really disagree on this one, but I do think that there's a middle ground between the two opinions. I understand what you're saying is you have to respect the source material, right? Or you have to respect the story overall. If people in your story start acting out of character to accommodate the players, it's going to break the narrative illusion for everybody and make it a worse story, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, it's the story is an evolving framework based around the actions of your players. Like in our last 7C game, like I had no idea that you and Zach were going to go off and do the stuff you did. And I had a sequence of actions sort of planned on my adventure of how things were going to go that didn't account for your off into left field actions. Mm-hmm. And as the game went on the fly, I kind of reworked the back end, the stuff you didn't see, to account for it. And it worked out differently, and it flowed pretty nicely, and I may not have gotten 100% of the content and information conveyed that I would have otherwise, but it the story itself was able to proceed without I hope, I believe, mm-hmm. without putting any obstacles to your player agency. Your characters were still able to do what they wanted to do.
Right, exactly. That's not the conversation, I don't think. It's a little bit different. That's like changing things because the players did something a little bit different versus doing things for the players.
Definitely. Absolutely. Yeah. And maybe that's the point. Like my story, the story as I had started out has lines through it and things got completely reworked because no battle plan ever survives contact with the enemy. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't go in the direction I had intended it, but it still went in a pretty cool direction. And I was able to rework the stuff that you guys didn't see to accommodate for things and not, and proceed with the overall goals, of our kind of season long story. Like, you know, the overall plot was still able to proceed.
And actually that's right. Actually a pretty good example, because first of all, you're just talking about improvisation
improvising
within the context. Mm-hmm. And you know, that was what was necessary and worked, but you weren't free to just say, no, you can't do that. A giant a giant slab falls down that door. You can't go in that door. You have to go around and go to the door I want you to go through.
That would have been horrible if I did that. Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah, it would. Well, so, and it would have been dual. Like, I mean, I could have done it as a storyteller, but it would have made me a bad storyteller, right?
Right.
Like,
right.
I agree with that. Okay, cool.
And, you know, we've talked about railroading numerous times here. And again, you know, that's not the, you know, the game master is not free to do that. They are subject to, and yeah, you're right. Making a change and going with the flow, especially if it's character driven, is good. But
especially
if it is, but you know, you're not, you know, you didn't make that change throwing the genre out. You didn't have aliens come down and say you have to do this. You know, you didn't.
Right.
You know, you are restricted to the narrative. And the genre and you know, all the things that are part of what is expected of the game.
Right. And I think that's sort of where it becomes an issue of degrees. Like, so in our previous example where we talked about, you know, what if your players want to go and your level two characters want to go start a fight with a huge dragon that's going to obviously kill them all. Okay.
Cool.
We talked about,
let them.
Well, yeah, potentially. Like, and generally as a game master, what do? You say like, okay, there's a big sign by the door that says this dragon's huge, is going to kill you or something like that. Like, you give them some sort of in-world indication. Maybe somebody in the nearby town says, oh my God, I heard you're going to attack this dragon. Seriously, it killed the Legion of Knights last week. Do not go. It will kill you. Like, you can convey the information to them, but you don't actually board up the cave and prevent them from getting in there. And if they're really determined to kill themselves, either A, you let them after giving them, you know, like all the information that they need to make an informed decision, and their informed decision is still self-destructive. Either A, you do let them lead themselves to their inevitable demise, or you do the Ex Machina thing. You get there, and guess what? The dragon's gone. Maybe all the treasure's gone. Then it becomes a whole nother story. Like, what the heck happened to the dragon?
It evolves. Yeah.
So, you know, it's. Potentially you can roll with it and see where it goes, or if this is a pattern of you know, if you feel like your players seriously think that they can do no wrong, then maybe a wrist slap is in order. Maybe, okay, you all get vaporized, reroll. Like, if that's, you know, if it's something you need to convey to the players and not the characters, then maybe story punishment is in order.
True.
That's definitely true.
Yeah.
I think I have the happy middle ground that we're looking for in this conversation.
Oh, yeah?
Because it's like you guys are on, like, opposite sides of this opinion.
it doesn't feel like it, but it does. So go on. I mean, yeah.
Because the thing is, it's like, yeah, when it comes down to it, the GM has the ability to do whatever he wants, because he's the GM. He is the controller of this story that you are sitting down and playing.
Yes,
there are these unspoken rules of GMing where you have to keep everything PC. You know, you have to keep it PC. You have to keep it consistent with the story that's going along. You have to keep it. You know, because if like Mark said, if you bring all these outside things, aliens into a medieval world, whatever, you know, like that's not going to be, yeah, it'll be funny maybe for a minute, but it's like, you're getting away from the reason you're here.
Yeah. And you're going to push
the sign of a bad story.
Telling the story.
And you're going to push players away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. But also this comes back to, well, what kind of game are you playing? Like, are you guys just doing a dungeon crawl? Cool. This doesn't matter then. You know, like in a dungeon crawl, anything can happen. And it's like, you're just there to have fun, hack and slash, get some loot. But if you're doing like a true, this is a story game, you're following a campaign. Try and stay as close to the material as possible. Definitely. Well,
and part of the material that you're trying to adhere to is the characters themselves. Like, you know, the players have made a set of characters that have, you know, maybe they've got their own backstory, maybe they've got their own motivations. You know, they're trying to kind of get into the heads and the skins of these characters, and kind of, you know, working that into your story is a good idea. Like, you know, if you've got a story written for, you know, if you've got a party full of barbarians and suddenly they're on the bridge of the Enterprise, you know, then
right.
Obviously yeah, exactly. We talked about genre shifting, but that's kind of part of it too, is like, I'm not going to make a let's plunder this kingdom adventure for a bunch of like a party of paladins. So, you know, it's, you want to, yeah, but go on.
No, that's fine. Yeah, there are definitely times in story heavy story games like the stuff that we do,
yeah,
where the GM probably shouldn't do whatever he wants, just because the more of what the GM does that he wants, you know, that takes away from the character's ability to control the story and be more part of this story by being able to control the things that happens. Right. Like the way that Steve, you adjusted things as we went through your story. That's the way a good GM does things. That's the way like things should be done, you know, by the GM. You know, you change those things as we go, so it stays consistent with our story.
Mm-hmm. And allows the players, the agency to affect what's going on too.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Thank you.
But if you're not yeah. giving these players the ability to interact with your story, if you're just going, no, you can't do that because I say so, without a narrative example, like if you don't help back that up or justify it,
right,
that turns you into a bad GM. Yeah. Because at that point, you don't care about the players because you're not allowing them to interact with your story.
Then you're just writing a novel and you're not writing an interactive role playing game.
Yes.
Yeah. You're writing something that is definite, not you know, improvisational like a tabletop game should be.
Yes.
Yeah. So definitely you can do what you want, but within consideration of the players at your table. Mm-hmm. You know? Definitely. Anything else on that topic there?
I don't think so.
I think I'm good.
We probably could keep talking.
We should do a whole podcast on this. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Actually, interestingly, I was just watching, I think we talked about the Seth Skarkowski, things. He has a whole series on bad GM, things that GMs can't do or shouldn't do.
Nice.
Which, so there's a, you know, whole reference of, you know, stuff that GMs can't or shouldn't do.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Cool.
And also, you know, going back to the whole bad GM thing, going back to that one animated series we watched on YouTube.
Oh, yes. Yes, that's
and
right.
That one story that we had talked about, and just like not allowing these players to, it's like, really?
The players,
why would you allow them to do that? Like, come on, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
At that point, that's not a, you know, that's not a tabletop game. Again,
right.
That's probably closer to a novel, something that's more finite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And well, for reference, I think this is the situation where the players went to a certain place and made a really good dice roll and ended up making a decision that catapulted to the end of the story and ruined the whole campaign.
Right. Right.
No, I think what happened is like they ended up teleporting to, was it the moon or a different place, and couldn't get back.
They visited the place too early, if I remember right.
Yeah.
So the game master wasn't ready for them to be there, which, you know, why he made that an option was
exactly. Yeah. And at the time we were all smacking our foreheads and saying, you're the GM. Why did you allow that to occur? Like
right.
when the players roll a die, like they don't know what the result's going to be, especially when it's something as crazy as that. So you, as a GM, you could have just as easily said, and nothing happens. And if you wanted to say, like, even if you were like stuck in your canon about, no, this is the teleport thing that needs to be here for the end of my epic, you could have like quickly added in, oh, okay, it didn't happen because they didn't have the sacred gem of so-and-so. Let me write down sacred gem of so-and-so and I'll make an adventure where they have to go get that in the future. Like,
yes,
exactly. You know, like there should be a way to write around their actions without sacrificing your greater story campaign.
Your story.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Campaign. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Again, we could keep talking about this.
That's true.
Yeah.
Let's keep going. Mark had another topic here about assumed common context. Yeah, this might be another one we can talk forever about.
We just did our session zero, but this is almost, this kind of ties into that, I think.
Okay.
And that's when looking at a game or going over it with your characters, what content is, there's content that should be, I think, obvious that necessarily isn't. And it's hard to sometimes recognize that. For example, we just did a session zero about Star Trek. Did we need to specify that there would be stars and you may be trekking among those stars? Or is that something that's accepted and acknowledged by everybody, you know, involved?
Well, so here's yeah. the thing. I think this overall thing goes more to your history with your players at the table, if you're the GM in the situation.
Well, yeah. And I've talked about this before, that I tend to play IP games specifically because my intention is that there already is this kind of perceived knowledge of the universe, and that a lot of the basics are already established.
Mm-hmm.
The last, and I think I've told this story on air, but the last time I played Star Trek, I set up this encounter where this Klingon was battling this defenseless, trader ship, and the ship came along, and rather than coming to the rescue, which I would assume, in, you know, as a basis of heroic nobility, that you're going to come to the rescue of the, you know, the victim here.
Mm-hmm.
the player said, or the captain said, nah, we'll just wait and see what happens. All the other players were like kicking and screaming, but because that player was the captain, nothing was able to happen.
Oh my God.
And eventually they killed the victim, and then, you know.
How frustrating was that?
Yeah.
Oh, exactly. I've heard this story before.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds extremely frustrating.
You know, and do you need to, you know, I've never seen the Star Trek episode where they said, nah, let's wait and see what happens, you know?
Yeah.
Well, let's wait until the innocent victim is dead. And then,
distress signal,
know,
and Picard's like, let's see how this plays out.
Yeah. Yeah. So, was that something that... Yeah, go ahead.
The thing is, I think this is a situation where you might have just had a bad captain.
It does sound like anybody else that in that happens. Group would have been a better captain. But if they were all kicking and screaming, I do feel like anybody else in that group would have been a better captain.
Would have been a better captain in that situation.
But that said, I think we've got actually a really good example of how to level set expectations with your players before the game starts, just based on our session zero today. Because Mark said, like, when he started, he's like, we're going to do a Star Trek game. It's going to be involve Starfleet intelligence. And the first thing, and he said, okay, so, Zach, Steve, what is your experience in this field? And Zach said, I've seen the first two movies, but I haven't seen the rest of them. And I said, here's what I've seen. And boom, like Mark
now we're
then
all on
had
the same
his
page.
Frame of context. He knew exactly what kind of the characters, what our players were going to start the game with. If we had a player three who was like, I have star what? Like, yeah. Like, I've never seen anything, blah, blah, blah. Then exactly. He'd have to plan around that too. But Mark did the framework. Like, that's Mark doing GM homework and figuring out where his players sit on the topic that his campaign is going to be around. And then it's his job to make a story that takes all of these things into an account. And maybe that actually involves assigning homework. Like, you know, when we started playing the Conan game, you know, my buddy John, who's playing with us, had never seen Conan. I was like, okay, you're coming over. We're watching Conan. That's all there is to it. Like, you need to have something so you can at homework. Least, you know, have as some kind of a prep. And maybe that's
frame
all they ever
reference.
Got. But
That,
you know.
But that still doesn't guarantee that everyone is going to be perceiving that in the same way.
Yes.
And that's just a thing you have to figure out how to deal with as a GM. Because it's like people are going to experience things differently and approach mm-hmm. things differently.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. The very, very unique situation with Star Trek is the whole captain decides thing.
That's true too. Yeah.
Because it's like if we were playing in 7th C and this same thing happened, Steve and I were playing this, it's not like just because I say we're going to do it this way doesn't mean we're actually going to do it this way, because Steve and I are on an equal footing as characters.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That's true.
So that's maybe just a bad captain situation. I don't know.
Well, I think that particular scenario might actually be a little bit limited to Star Trek, because even though like other games, like you know, much mirth is made on the internet about infighting and politics about who gets to be the party leader, but from a practical perspective, in every RPG, pretty much every RPG I can ever think of, there has never been a leader per se. It's always a group thing. Like if you think of like, you know, Flash, Bash, and Panache, who's the leader? Everyone, all three people put their hands up. No one put their hands up. Like, just,
yeah,
there's no leader. Yeah. And that's way more than normal for RPGs than, okay, you know, you're the party leader. Tell us where to go. I've never actually played a game like that. I'm not going to say I wouldn't have fun in a game like that, because maybe it would work. I don't know. I just have zero experience actually having a party leader in the players.
Yeah. Agreed.
Well, let's look at Conan.
Okay.
Because, again, as you said, at that, you know, for that game, everybody at least watched the movie. Everybody, you know, did that. And I wrote this huge epic thing that was based on this concept of heroic nobility.
Mm-hmm.
And I presented this the almost exact same situation that was in the Star Trek. I had this poor defenseless victim with nothing come up and say, I need help, and was told, not unless you can pay us. And, you know, they left him to die.
Yeah. Well,
and, you know, I was just expecting that is not the behavior of noble heroic characters.
That's fair.
But that was a different perception apparently of what heroism is.
Well, like when it comes to the movie Conan, which again we were using as a frame of reference, I never actually saw any of those characters as heroic or noble. Like Conan was driven by vengeance. You know, that was his MO, was I want revenge on the people who killed my family, and rightfully so, and we all love John Wick and it made for a great movie. But the other characters in the movie also all had some sort of relatively self-serving motivation. There was a thief who got kind of wrapped into it because she was looking for gold. And eventually the thief and Conan got kind of tied up, so they became each other's motivation. But there was never anybody out there who was a paladin. And at no point in the movie did anyone say, hey, our village is being attacked, can you please help us out? And they said, you know, pretty much yeah for no reason. Like everything, all the actions in the movie were them reacting to things attacking them, or them trying to kind of push their own personal motivations, their own, whether it's vengeance or profit. Maybe it's just we had different takes on the movie.
Yeah.
Or actually, more appropriately, I think, like Mark said, he's got a bigger framework for the whole Conan multiverse than we do, the whole noble barbarian, noble savage thing. And I don't think any of us were really going in with that perception of that's how barbarians work.
Right. So again, this is one of those I didn't even think that needed to be mentioned. Why would I imagine that needed to be spelled out? That's, you know, that's the basis of, you know,
yeah, that's
everything.
That's so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
How you and the group just have had completely different ideas of what their characters were.
Yeah.
Which is really strange. It's odd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love hearing these stories that Mark tells me, because even though it pains me to hear this, because I know Mark is heavily struggling over here. They're just so interesting.
Yeah.
They're so interesting.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it as frustrating and nerve-wracking as it is, it's also kind of what makes role-playing so unique and so interesting, really. So
yeah,
you know, there's even with that, it's still kind of a fascinating situation.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, because you're having these challenges come up, and you have to find a way to overcome these challenges as a group together.
Yeah,
and it's just, you know, that that's what makes you evolve as a group.
Yes.
You know, makes you closer to each other and just, you know, it becomes a better group.
True.
Because of it.
True.
Yep.
But yeah, I think that might be a good place to cap this off here.
Cool.
Definitely. Well, thank you, gentlemen, for joining me today. It has been a pleasure speaking with you all, and I look forward to the next one.
And that's it for this episode of Tabletop Radio Hour. Like always, you can find this episode on soundcloud.com/tabletopradiohour and on iTunes. You can find us on Twitter @tabletopcast if you have any questions or comments. You can join us over on facebook.com/tabletopradiohour for regular updates. We also have an email address that is tabletopradiohour@gmail.com. Our website, tabletopradiohour.wordpress.com. You can find information about our Patreon page on our website. I want to thank you all for listening, and keep rolling 20s.